Okay. Well, this is a very, very selective set of references. And so I was trying to stick with what I thought were sensible models. And right down here you've got what I thought were exotic, and I wasn't able to attend the workshop two or three month ago, but there seemed to be an awful lot about this one and nothing at all about all these, and so I thought I would get the balance a bit more. So let me explain the notation. MS, as usual, is the scale of supersymmetry breaking in the vacuum that might be 10 to the 10th GV. And I've put a twiddle on it because that denotes the scale of supersymmetry breaking during inflation. And there's a whole stack of models where the scales are the same. And there's another stack of models where it's bigger during inflation. And then there are these that I've called exotic models because they don't use the sort of package of field theory ideas that people normally use and don't even have to be supersymmetric. So that's some sort of classification. Now, the first thing is a disclaimer. The model of inflation for me begins when the observable universe approaches horizon exit and when the density perturbation starts to get generated. And of course, that's sort of 50 E-folds of inflation. And that wipes out almost all memory of what has gone before. That's what inflation does. So I'm not looking for a model that describes the evolution before our observable universe leaves the horizon. That's too ambitious. Maybe the same model works at higher energies, but maybe not. Because remember that the Hubble parameter when our universe leaves the horizon is less than 10 to the minus 5 of Planck, because otherwise there would be tensor perturbations that would be we haven't seen. So if we believe that everything begins at the Planck scale, we do need a model to get down from the Planck scale, and it should be some sort of inflation. But it could, for example, be fast roll, the pressure might not at all be equal to minus the energy density like it is in, because remember the only requirement for inflation is pressure is less than minus a third of the energy density, just to have inflation per se. So that's the disclaimer then. We're just doing what I would call observable inflation. And now the next thing is the question of assessing a model of inflation is more complicated than it was 2 years ago. And that's because we've realized that there are two scenarios. We need to generate, this is for generating the primordial density perturbation. We need to generate that. So let's call it the PDP. And for the first 20 years of inflation, it was assumed that the inflaton field generated the PDP, with just two exceptions. It was mentioned twice in the literature. But then a couple of years ago, David Wands and myself drew attention to the fact that it could just be a totally different field that we called the curvaton. And if we don't demand that the inflation model directly generates the PDP, life becomes much easier for the inflation models if we combine it with some curvaton model where some other field generates the PDP. The point is, of course, that every field with mass much less than h during inflation, every scalar field gets a flat spectrum of perturbations. And there's no reason at all why some other field than the inflaton couldn't generate the density perturbation. Because it generates the curvature perturbation. The data is consistent with this being what people call purely adiabatic, and hence characterized completely by the space-time curvature perturbation. But I didn't want to assume that in the notation. It's just the primordial density perturbation, whatever it might be. Okay, so now almost all models assume slow roll. So let me just remind you what that entails. It basically boils down to a condition on the inflationary potential. The first two derivatives, most importantly. And of course that presupposes that there is a potential V of phi that's the source of inflation. That's mandatory if we adopt the inflaton hypothesis. And the reason it's mandatory is that we need this to generate the flat spectrum. And so departures from that would be reflected in a tilt of the spectrum, which isn't observed. On the other hand, if we do it with the curvaton, we don't even need to have that particular mechanism of inflation. But having said that, virtually all of these models are of the slow roll variety. It's difficult to come up with anything else that really works. We could imagine as a counterexample. Well, there are two counterexamples. One is where this is marginally violated, that Andrew Lindy called fast roll inflation. And a different example is what we called thermal inflation, where the potential the zero temperature potential simply doesn't support inflation at all, but the finite temperature correction holds the field at the origin for about 10 e-folds of inflation. So that's an example of a kind of inflation that has nothing to do with a rolling field. There is no inflaton in that case. But those are sort of, they don't really work. They don't give enough e-folds, for one thing, typically.
Can you comment on in this fast rolling inflation, how you can use what do we normally call slow roll parameters, just to get agreement with the slow roll?
I don't have a precise figure, but the ratio of this divided by this, I think, has to be less than 2 anyway. This is eta. This divided by this is eta. It's like of order 1. I don't think it can be as big as 2. It depends how many e-folds you want. So there's a continuous transition. You can have eta 1 or 0.5 or 0.1. No, eta equal to 1, I think, gives about 20 or something. There are games you can play. For example, when that fast roll has ended, in a hybrid inflation model, the waterfall field can do another 20 e-folds of fast roll, and etc., And if you have thermal inflation at a later stage, then you don't need 50 e-folds. Anyway, you can get away with 15 or so. But this is all sort of exotic. These are just down the middle of the road, mostly slow roll inflation models. So we'd better get going or we'll never finish. So modular inflation. What do we mean by this? Well, people say that this kind of potential there are many fields that would have that kind of potential where F has value and derivatives of order 1, and those, that's what I mean in this context by a modulus. And usually, so in an inflation model, by definition, that would be the thing that we've called MS Twiddle. No, that's wrong. anyhow, people usually assume that the thing in front is the scale of Susie breaking in a vacuum. But Tom told me that he doesn't believe this, but the majority seem to believe this. So let's take that as the paradigm, and let's try to inflate with it. So we expand around a maximum. And by taking phi close to the maximum, we can certainly satisfy this one. But then what about the second one? Well, V0 is going to be of order ms to the fourth. And m squared is going to be of order V0 divided by Planck squared, just because f has value and derivative is of order 1. And this marginally violates this condition. But it's only marginal, so we could hope that the potential happens to be quite a bit flatter than the generic expectation. And so let's proceed by assuming that that's actually satisfied. Okay? So that was first mentioned in this paper, but I didn't look it up recently, and I'm not quite sure what conclusion they came to. But we know now that that this doesn't work, because the within the inflaton paradigm, because that would require a very high scale, and there isn't any model of supersymmetry breaking that can accommodate such a high scale for Susie breaking. So we either have to abandon the...
Sorry, what is required?
Well, you just have to work it out. There's a well-known formalism for working out the density perturbation predicted by the inflaton hypothesis.
But this is the reason why one might want to abandon the assumption that MS is the scale of Susie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what was the question?
When you say they can't accommodate that Susie breaking scale, do you mean there's just no way to build it into a model that's consistent with the particle
physics? Yeah, because if we take 10 to the 10, then the Susie breaking is transmitted with gravitational strength from whatever sector it occurs in. Mm-hmm. If we want to make it bigger, then it would have to be somehow transmitted with less than gravitational strength, which is generally held to be sort of impossible. That's the basic reason why we don't want to go much above 10 to the 10 GeV.
And you get this number just matching the amplitude depth.
Yeah, yeah. So...
Just to make a point, though, it is possible to assume a theory in which during inflation...
This is it. This.
You're breaking super symmetry a lot more than you are.
So now we come to the second on the list, and the bracket is there. The bracket is there not because it's not important, but because it actually falls into this category, but that's the place to talk about it. So Tom said... Okay, well, let's forget about this being anything to do with Susie breaking, and in a Horava-Witten setup, he found that it was replaced by m gut to the power 6 divided by m Planck squared, and that can be pretty much 10 to the 15 GeV to the power 4. So, but we've still got to assume that the potential is flatter than it would generically be by a factor 10 or something. So that works. So I guess the original one doesn't work, and this one seems to work with that proviso.
I'm sorry for you, but I fundamentally didn't understand it. When you say you'd have to transmit to the waking earth at a strength more weakly than gravity,
yes.
Is that, are you imposing that you require Susie to be the solution of the hierarchy problem or something like that? If I don't care about that, I can easily have such a problem.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that these kinds of potentials would arise in a non-supersymmetric theory.
No, I'm saying you could have a theory be supersymmetric, but just the Susie breaking scale would be higher. So if Susie is not responsible for solving the hierarchy, it's just there.
Oh.
I'm just trying to understand what the input
is. Oh, you're right. Well, yes, that's perfectly correct. Yeah, that's true, of course. Yeah, yeah. Sure, yeah. So we use SUSY for inflation, but we don't use it for the standard model. Yeah, okay. So this third one is, I think, is very interesting and almost unknown, because Kadota, I believe, is a PhD student in Berkeley, and Ewan Stewart never goes anywhere, so... He doesn't give talks, so therefore nobody ever finds out what he's been doing. But it is published. So it's very interesting. They point out that this will usually be the real part of a complex field. So they replace the potential by the modulus and the phase of the complex field. And then they say that the maximum is actually a point of enhanced symmetry. So the m squared becomes a running mass, and then this generates in the complex phi plane. The thing that was the maximum now becomes the rim of a crater, so the middle is actually a minimum, and there's a rim of a crater where the running mass just runs through zero according to global supersymmetry RGE equations. It's related to another model of his. And then there is dependence on the phase, non-trivial dependence. So we're dealing with what people call a two-field model of inflation. See, the point is they're trying to get the PDP from the inflaton with the 10 to the 10 GV. This is the gain. And they're using the fact that the potential depends on both the radial and the angular directions. And so then there's a formalism for calculating the density perturbation in that case. And I think a very crucial thing is that around the rim we've got actually slow roll. They also want to use the generic value. They want to say that this of order this is the tree level value, but then the quantum, the one loop correction pushes the mass through zero, and near that zero is a maximum and so on. And so then now in some direction the field will just descend. There won't be any angular dependence. But then in another direction, the field will have significant curvature. It's sort of like Affleck-Dyne baryogenesis, the other way around. And in this regime, you have to do numerical calculation to calculate the primordial density perturbation. And with a carefully chosen initial condition, so that you sort of get extreme curvature, you can generate the flat spectrum. The carefully chosen initial condition, of course, would have to be anthropic. But what's nice about it is that it just puts together very standard ingredients. RGE, the standard scale, the generic expectation for M, and there's nothing very contrived except the anthropically selected initial condition. So,
if there are some conditions of the masses, you can do two-field inflations. If there are some necessarily higher masses, it's useful to
The toy potential that they write down without any great justification is this one. Mod phi squared, and then then the phi cubed breaks the symmetry. That's right, and then the coefficient of that is determined by this ansatz, and then they stabilize it with a plus 5/4. I'm not quite sure why this one doesn't break the symmetry as well, but they emphasize that's only a toy model, but that's what they use to work out everything.
And then they do one loop correction in this model?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that they evaluate an honest one loop correction. They probably just say that M goes like some log of phi without any very precise because I mean, to do the actual calculation you would have to say what were the interactions of phi, which they don't write down. It's a point of enhanced symmetry, so by definition there are interactions. They're not supposed to be standard model interactions, so in fact the VEV of phi is going to be a Planck distance away from the maximum. It's in some hidden sector. It is super. They have in mind that it will be supersymmetric, but I mean, with that toy model potential, they haven't really used supersymmetry in any serious way. But of course, by writing down the RGE, they've assumed supersymmetry to have any control at all over the quantum correction. So the fermionic partner of phi would be supposed to have presumably zero mass, and the potential of phi is supposed to come from soft supersymmetry breaking. That's the assumption. So that's that. Now, there's a completely different way of using that same potential that I'm calling hybrid modular inflation. So the completely different way of using the same kind of modulus potential is to invoke hybrid inflation. And now, but the inflaton field, let's call the inflaton field S squared, because it's typically a gauge singlet, is not the modulus. The modulus is what people call the waterfall field, and so that's the basic ansatz, the basic potential for hybrid inflation. So when S has a large value, the modulus is driven to zero, and then S rolls, and when it rolls below critical value, the modulus is destabilized and rolls rapidly to its VEV. So this the hierarchy that we're imposing then is M squared is significantly less than H squared, but M phi squared is significantly bigger. That's the hierarchy that we need for hybrid inflation. Now, the breakthrough of Randall et al. Was to make the hypothesis that indeed that was a modulus, so this is MS fourth, and that both of these come from soft supersymmetry breaking, so roughly they're going to be the same. By the way, I should have said that this is the same thing as saying as a condition on the mass. If the double prime is dominated by a mass, this is the same thing as saying the mass is much less than H. So this is the generic thing, and we have to suppose that there's a mild hierarchy that mildly breaks the what we expect. And then we've got a viable model, and it turns out that with 10 to the 10 GV, it does actually work. It does generate the density perturbation.
I'm sorry, but these are, in this case, not much greater than sun. They're just slightly greater than sun.
Well, it's got to be, this one's got to be a factor 10 because of the spectral index. That's the degree of fine-tuning that we need.
And this is the model that the authors call supernatural.
This is what they call supernatural inflation. Okay, now...
I'm confused on what problem we're actually trying to solve. It has nothing to do with reheating. I thought there was some prediction to have actually reheating because it's the mechanism that dumps energy into the... So we're not talking about reheating at all, just about getting perturbation?
Oh, yeah. I should have issued the same disclaimer. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking what happened before observable inflation. I'm not asking what happened after either, because that would hopefully involve some different sector of the theory.
Because a reheating is not.
It's not an issue that I'm addressing. No.
The only issue is getting potential to give you perturbation.
Yeah.
Why do you want to get a second field? I guess I'm confused on what the rules are.
Without a second field, what I've said is about the end of the story. There aren't really any other models that work. And since at the time people thought modular inflation wasn't working either, the first model of inflation, of course, was this one. And lambda was 10 to the minus 14. So people definitely didn't like that. The great thing about hybrid inflation is that there isn't any fine tuning beyond this mild hierarchy.
The inflation occurs, let's say, S rolls down to zero and then phi rolls?
Inflation occurs when S is rolling towards zero but has a large value, so as to stabilize phi.
What's the purpose of phi?
To generate, the only reason there's a V0 there is that phi is displaced by an amount of order Planck from its minimum.
Yes. It's to give you a constant in the
potential. A constant in the potential, yes. Yeah. So Stewart's contribution to this was again running mass. He said, well, let's accept this when S is of order Planck. But then let's use the RGE. So then choosing the renormalization scale to be the field value, one obtains what people call a renormalization group improved potential. And so he said, well, the RGE could drive M through zero at some point, and near that zero there would be a maximum or minimum of the potential. And near the maximum or minimum, this would be well satisfied. And it's very generic. One only has to look at the logarithmic running and work that out. But it doesn't solve the second part of the hierarchy. We still have to somehow get the waterfall field to be heavy enough. So it sort of only does half the job. But it has a very interesting prediction of a strongly running spectral index, which eventually will confirm or rule it out. So it's got an observational signature. The running is in the opposite direction from W map paper, by the way. So that's both those are sort of, they use known ingredients. I would think they're quite nice. But all of these involve a modulus, and that means that we're involving a field which during inflation is a Planck distance away from its VEV, which makes it difficult to connect with collider physics or any kind of... We can't test the model directly by observation because it's too far away from the vacuum. Now, here are two models that overcome that objection. What do I mean by a mu field? Well, the standard model Lagrangian contains this famous term. And so the idea is to turn that into a dynamical field with a kinetic term. And so that then becomes the verve of some field. So that's what I'm calling a mu field. It's not standard notation. So these guys are trying to construct a model of inflation that doesn't have any, where inflation takes place at a distance from the true vacuum, much less than Planck. And they're trying to just go a little bit beyond the standard model and do inflation. And it's not clear if it's working or not. Let me explain. I'm sorry, yes, I meant W, that was a mistake, yeah. So the superpotential has mu, HU, HD in it. Yeah. Thank you. So they're different. So the first one was in the context of gauge-mediated Suzy breaking. And it's not something that I've really worked on personally. But their superpotential, okay, so mu is replaced by, let's say, the square of some field divided by Planck. And then they have additional terms in the superpotential. And X is the field which generates the Suzy breaking in the vacuum. And so since it's a gauge-mediated model, this would be some orders of magnitude less than 10 to the 10 GeV. So then they calculate the potential from that model, bearing in mind that there is this Fx.
So they don't actually have dynamics that forces Fx to be non-zero in this superposition.
No, that's the remaining terms. Yeah. And to cut a long story short, if we require that the inflaton generates the primordial density perturbation, the model is basically dead for the following reason. The potential that they require to generate the primordial density perturbation is then much less than the Suzy breaking scale. Well, of course, that can be done because the actual potential has two pieces to it, where this is the field-dependent gravitino mass, but then you see they're requiring a very accurate cancellation between those two bits, which they weren't aware of when they wrote the paper. So it really doesn't work. The value of V0 required to give the PDP is much less than the Suzy breaking scale. So on the other hand, if we could combine it with a curvitron model, then it's very, very attractive, and so that's therefore an attractive piece of research to try to do, as far as I can see. Because there isn't any fine, if we allow V0 to be of order, Suzy breaking scale, this model is free of fine tuning.
What purpose does the coupling to the standard model serve for, as far as inflation is concerned? Or is it just there because this way you get another nice result that the mu term comes out?
Well, this was independently motivated in order to generate the mu term. engaged mediated suicide breaking.
Okay.
And then in addition, they noticed that it gave inflation. Yeah, so that, again, is attractive. It's nice to use known ingredients and then just observe, by the way, this also gives inflation. That's a nice thing to do. So it's very attractive, but we would need to generate the curvature perturbation some other way. Both of the authors have lost interest in the model, so... But I have a PhD student who's going to try to find a curvatron mechanism. Now, Steve King's one is totally different. And he writes this. This is a coupling constant of order 10 to the minus 10, a dimensionless coupling constant. If S were a constant, it would be called the NMSSM, next to minimal. But S isn't a constant, and in fact it's the inflaton field. And N is a waterfall field in a hybrid inflation model. So that's their model. It doesn't stand for King now. So lambda and K are both of order 10 to the minus 10. I'm not sure how the lambda was supposed to be explained in the original NMSSM model, but in the last year or two, they've written down a higher dimensional setup where these values could be naturally explained by trading it off for the size of extra dimensions. And then with sort of seven extra dimensions, then the fine-tuning goes down to sort of roughly something like that, and it's not so bad anymore. And this is apparently a game that people are playing in beyond standard model particle physics that I don't really work in, but people say it's a reasonable way of getting... So some of the fields are in the bulk and some are on the brains, and it's all a bit beyond me personally. But they say it's working. But again, the problem is, if we want to generate the PDP, it has the same problem as the Dan-Riotto model, that you have to cancel the required value of V0 is just too low. However, King and company say that the Higgs can act as a curvatron in the model. But this is only on the basis of numerical calculations. It's too complicated to work out the prediction for the primordial density perturbation analytically. And personally, I'm very suspicious because there's nothing in the model that would explain why the Higgs would generate such a large, in some sense this is a large perturbation compared with what it looks like the model ought to give. But the flat direction, in the flat combination of the Higgs, will acquire a flat spectrum of perturbations. So that's work in progress by them. But it's obvious that if either of those models could work, and especially if the Higgs can be the curvatron, you know, we've got much closer to the standard model, so we have a possibility of testing collider and detector observations might have something to say about the model. Okay. Well, we're not getting anywhere really, so. I think the next lot of models I find sort of less interesting, which is just as well. So I'd like to suggest that. I'd like to suggest that we maybe skip those.
Could you say just a few words of why you think determined inflation is not interesting? Because I know some people who like determined inflation.
Okay, well, Well, determined inflation, the motivation was to get this. And in a generic F-term model, M is of order H, and so in a D-term model, there's no reason why M has to be of order H. It can be arbitrarily small, so it would appear. And that was the motivation to fix this. But there seem to be two objections. One is that the required value of the inflaton field comes out to be of order Planck during inflation. So then the question is, we've got control over the mass squared term, but then we've got all these infinite number of other terms that we've lost control over, so it seems to me that's not a very good bargain.
So they're just using the sort of renormalizable
feature. Chris Calder and John March Russell pointed this out, that since phi is of order Planck, all these terms are going to come in. And then there are some technical things. If it's a Phaeopoulos D term, Iliopoulos D term, that's meant to be at the string scale, then that's too high for inflation. That's another. But then it's never been clear to me what happens if we go beyond a weakly coupled heterotic string. There are one or two papers, but nobody seems to have gone after that very enthusiastically. But it seems that because of that, we solved a small problem and got a bigger one instead of it. And then there are these, so that doesn't seem to work really. And then there are these gut models that Kaiser Schaff has been doing sort of all his life, and they seem to be sort of all right. But then gut, any gut is going to be complicated, so. This was some models that we suggested that the D term could be responsible for that scale V0 in an F-term model. That was the basic idea. And we could fix up this inequality, but it was never pursued to the point of getting an actual explicit potential. And the connection with the standard model is weak. And then people have been saying, well, another way of fixing this up is suppose the inflaton is a PNGB, pseudo Nambu-Goldstone boson, in addition to supersymmetry, or maybe even without supersymmetry. That's another way of getting a flat potential. But there's no connection with any other ideas beyond the standard model as yet. It's not connected with GUT or the mu term or the Petri-Quinn field. By the way, in Steve King's model, that those fields S and N are responsible for Petri-Quinn symmetry breaking as well. Okay, so what about these, the exotic ones? Well, I mean, Andre proposed a long time ago that maybe it would be this or maybe lambda phi fourth. But then he needs phi to be of order 10 Planck masses to inflate. And again, that's hard to understand in any sort of conventional field theory. And so then these authors said, maybe phi is the fifth component of a gauge field living in five dimensions, and the potential comes from Wilson line effect. And they claim that then they can justify the absence of the non-renormalizable terms. But then Tom, Banks et al. Say that in string theory they can't find any realization of this, really. In any case, it's very exotic for the following reason. that the potential is supposed to come from the infinite Kaluza-Klein tower. And you calculate the Kolmogorov-Weinberg potential for each of these and add them up. And like the sum doesn't really converge. It's Peter Nillis and collaborators made this sort of complaint. So we've got a field theory with an infinite number of fields in it, all of which are relevant in some sense. So that's why I would say this is very exotic.
I think that they had been right that you could get a model with that large decay constant for the Gulfstrom boson, then it would have had to work out that, you know, maybe we wouldn't know how to do the calculations correctly, but the potential would have the properties to possess if the natural scale of this field is really as large as they claim.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem I see with such models is just that, you know, you can do lots of things in Kaluza-Klein theory that we don't know how to do in string theory. And if you try to do it in string theory, I wouldn't claim there's a no-go theorem, but we try 6 or 7 different possible ways, and all of them, even though when they started to look like they would give something like that effect,
yeah,
you really did the dynamics correctly, you found it went away.
Yeah.
So it seems unlikely to be that there is not a theorem.
Let me just understand this. You're saying that if there were a field, if string theory did give you a field with a required property, then probably this Wilson line mechanism would be responsible for the potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have the properties that they said, but it's the question of getting a field whose natural scale is much larger than the Planck scale. That just doesn't seem to happen in string theory. I should say, Scott Thomas and Thomas Demopoulos were claiming that there's a low-energy mechanism for doing this based on coupling things to conformal field theories. And I don't understand it, but maybe there will be a paper about that. Mm.
Okay. All right. Well, and then the last one, you heard a lot about it already, this conference. It seems to me that it's exotic, not only because we're colliding brains in extra dimensions, but it seems to me that the field theory that's valid during inflation, it can't somehow describe reheating. It seems to me that we've got a field theory during inflation, then we've got the reheating that doesn't seem to be a field theoretic phenomenon, and then we've got a different field theory containing the standard model after inflation. Is that right? That's the way it seems to me. Or can we write down one Lagrangian, one four-dimensional effective Lagrangian that both describes the collision of the brains reheating and our vacuum?
Not
Well, the inference on field is I was going to say the inference on field is non-zero when the brains are colliding, and then somehow once they've collided it doesn't exist anymore, but maybe you would say it's just zero, so it's a sort of Higgs mechanism. And then conversely, the standard model fields somehow don't exist before the brains collide, but would you say then you understand that again through some Higgs? Yeah.
I don't see why you say the standard model fields don't exist before the brains collide. You could have one of the brains being, you know, a multiple brain that has the standard model on it.
Oh, I thought we had to get them both together too.
I don't think that was.
Oh, right. In any case. In any case, I gather that it hasn't. So there was the comment, didn't see any obstacle, but that implies that it has not yet been done anyway. Yeah, so we don't have an actual four-dimensional Lagrangian at the moment that corresponds to this model.
The thing about that model is they found this R phi squared term, which made the potential not sufficiently flat.
Duvalian tie.
No, sorry, this is the most repeated.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's a universal thing that applies to everything on the list, right?
squared term that should be in the Lagrangian. So why isn't the problem for every model?
Well, as you say, one just assumes that if r phi squared were there, then it would give the same generic mass, m of order h.
Mm-hmm.
So whether its coefficient is tuned down or it's not there. That's a perfectly fair comment.
I think it's the case, maybe these hybrid models are a counterexample, but most models that I know have the problem that if you want to get inflation, you have to do, sort of 1 over the number of e-folds of inflation worth of functions.
Oh, no, but that definitely, for the hybrid model, that's definitely not right. No. But it's not right for your module of inflation either, is it? It's not the case with your module of inflation where you just impose the high scale. And then you only have to do moderate fine-tuning, just assume the potential is a bit flatter than you might expect.
Yeah, but I would have said...
That's because you've got a limited number of e-folds, as you're saying.
Right.
Oh, right. No, the hybrid ones don't suffer from
hybrid
that.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's... didn't come to any conclusion, did we?
So what is your conclusion? You like as your favourite or the role model?
Well, I mean, it would be great if we could just stay close to the standard model. Other than that, simplicity. I mean, these modular, hybrid modular ones, in a sense, are or some version of modular, not too exotic. Yep. That's it. Okay.